You know, you have those charity slogans that just stick in the mind. Make poverty history. Dogs not just for Christmas. This is genius stuff, isn't it?
Absolutely.
There's an art form, isn't there, to it? I've noticed actually on the internet, there are agencies that come up, pages and pages of agencies offering to help you with your charity slogan. Keith Camilla, you must have come across plenty in your time.
I like the one from a local charity in Lambeth, which is, it's a hand up, not a hand out.
Oh.
It certainly tells you that what that charity focuses on is education, training, and it gives the money to individuals. So you know immediately what its mission statement is.
Yeah, no, it's so true, because I mean, I've done some work on what they call strategy on a page, and what you try to do there is just put it succinctly in three words, because that's what people try and remember. And the two that I can remember, which was one was a sports council one, where they had a light bulb coming out of everybody's head, because we all needed light bulb moments, which was absolutely pathetic. But the other one that's just kicked back in with me is the ferries that go to France from Southampton and Portsmouth. And then Portsmouth came up with this slogan that just said, it's quicker from Portsmouth. It's probably about half a mile quicker, you know, but the slogan was brilliant.
We're talking about this because our guest today came up with the ultimate three-word slogan, which is also the name of the charity that she founded. Camilla, I'm going to let you do the big reveal.
Our guest is Gabby Edlin from Bloody Good Period.
Now, you came across Gabby some time ago, and you've been mentioning that she's somebody we should have on the podcast, Camilla. Tell me what it is about her and what she's done that has caught your imagination.
I think she's straddled a number of generations in a very interesting way. She, for me, harks back very much to the 1970s wave of feminism, which had as its visuals very graphic portrayals of women, of their bloody periods. The use of red in art was big then. And Gabby understands the impact of that. Maybe for some people it does shock for a few seconds, but then there is the humour in the phrase that is incredibly British, and I'm the non-British one on the panel saying that, that everybody, male, female, wherever, will respond to.
Yeah, very much so, isn't it? I think it is to the point, which is why I think it is, at the end of the day, a very good or a bloody good statement.
The interesting thing will be, when we hear from her, is why she wanted to become an institution in a way that now she is going to have to defend as a charity. What are the advantages for her?
I think also we should say that she's been quite controversial in that she's said on occasions that charities have got things wrong. They should be much more ethical about where their money comes from. And she's also said that she wants to disband her charity at the point where it's done what it's done.
She's wanting to be what I think is known in the trade as a sunset charity. So actually deliver something, literally sanitary products. And when I have translated that into some sort of action, which I think she is wanting government to take, targeting young women in schools, then she's going to say thank you very much and walk off to the next challenge, whatever that's going to be. And that's going to be really interesting to watch as well.
Keith?
The interesting thing that I would like to drill down on is her as a founder, how she selected her trustee board, because I think that for anyone that wants to be a founder who may be listening to this is a very good point.
And also, of course, that she's had to face, as so many charities have, a very dramatic change in the way that she operates, because the need has not gone away, but the way that she's had to deliver the need has changed during the time of coronavirus. So it's going to be a fascinating chat. I'm David Prest.
I'm Keith Davis.
And I'm Camilla McGibbon.
And this is Good Charity, Bad Charity. After completing an MA in Applied Imagination in the Creative Industries, Gabby Edlin founded Bloody Good Period at the end of 2016. The organisation aims to give period products to those who can't afford them, provide menstrual education to those less likely to access it, and to help everybody talk about periods. Warning, Euphemisms like sanitary pads and feminine hygiene are banned. To date, Bloody Good Period has taken care of an estimated 40,000 periods by providing period products to over 100 drop-in centres around Britain. And the key focus of much of its activities is on supplying refugee centres. Gabby grew up in a Jewish community in Manchester. After university, she realised she wanted to be, in quotes, a professional feminist. She's inspired by the work of Black American writers like Audre Lorde and Alice Walker, and she's been instrumental in persuading government to set up a period poverty task force. She shouts loud, and she likes rubbing up against the status quo. Gabby Edlin, thank you for joining us on the podcast. Is that a sort of fair encapsulation of your character?
It's very complimentary. I don't do it in a way to be irritating. I do it because I have a real sense of justice. But yeah, I think that's a fair assessment of the work that I do, to be honest, and my personality.
Well, Camilla has been going on about what you've done for months, and so we just had to get you in at some stage. Camilla, your witness.
Yeah, I even wore red lipstick in honour. But we'll put that aside. That's not a visual that's going to play well on the podcast.
I mean,
Gabby, one of the reasons I really wanted to have you talk to us was that you got people's attention. You have used social media. You've used a great slogan. Then you go to comedy and you've just been brilliant at bringing in comedians. But you're not crazy about tears. So you don't want people to think that anybody is a victim. And yet a lot of charities do that. So can you talk a bit about your thinking around this?
Yeah, so the comedy thing's been really, really important to me. And I think that also very much comes from my heritage. I'm an Eastern European Jew, and comedy is a huge part of my background how we cope with things, basically. So it just felt natural to me that you would use comedy for something as difficult to talk about as menstruation, and something so stigmatized and something so tabooed. You need a light way to crack that conversation open. I suppose that's slightly separate from, but also links really well to, the idea of not using weepy tears. The moment that I sort of realised that wasn't working anymore, I'm a very sensitive, very empathetic person, you know, to a fault, probably too thin-skinned to be in this industry. But I was once in the toilet at a service station. I think it must have been about like 2014, so before BGP. And I looked at the advert that you always get on the back of the toilets. I can't say that they have this in the men's toilets, I don't know, but they definitely have them in the women's toilets. And that's the big charities period appeal, basically. And they show you a very sad looking young woman of colour who can't get through the day, who's been ravaged by war, and all these really like huge, complex, nuanced things that are really basically like reduced into this one photo. And I just didn't respond to it.
Yeah.
And I'm, you know, a feminist. I'm a staunch feminist and I want rights for all women, and, you know, and just saw this advert and was like, that doesn't make me want to help. And that was sort of stayed with me. The more I sort of looked into it, I was really influenced by the work of a group called No White Saviours as well, who are really prolific on Instagram, who talk about the white saviourism in the charity industry. I just wanted to change that. And I wanted to create something that spoke to me. And to, I think that's probably why our demographic is pretty similar to me, you know, youngish women.
Before we go into how you really got this going, just briefly on that. Do tears equal money? And does comedy equal money? And can you actually quantify it?
Comedy does equal cash. You know, we know that from our events and that kind of thing. Tears equal more money. I'm 100% sure of that, but I'm not doing it. Tears equal people feeling really bad about themselves, feeling actually quite disempowered.
Absolutely.
They might send you a few quid, but they're not going to feel good about the fact that they've done that. And I don't want people to be engaged in my charity out of guilt. I want them to do it because they have a sense of justice.
I think that's so true, and well done for that, because I think guilt trips are short-lived.
Mm.
Okay, I can get over it if I send you £3, you know, and then I can go around telling everybody that I've done my bit. So I'm with that.
Can I just take you back a little bit? I think perhaps we need to just outline the Genesis story, the moment when you realised there was a demand and how you became inspired to start this charity.
Sure. So I've worked in the arts for quite a few years, in arts education, and I was also working as a nanny and decided that I wanted to do something interesting and something good. And so I volunteered for an asylum seeker drop-in centre in North London. And I got sent the list of all of the things that they were going to be collecting for the people who were coming to the drop-ins. And I noticed that there weren't any period supplies on there. And I had just read an article by Maya Oppenheim in Vice that was called The Homeless Period. And she talked about basically what people do without cash when they have their period. And so I asked the drop-in if that was something that they were going to be supplying. And there was no pushback. It was really just like, oh no, you know, maybe that's something that we could do, but we haven't really got the, you know, the logistics to support enough for everybody. So I was like, okay, well, I should do something. And so put a message on my personal Facebook at the time asking people to send me pads, which they did in droves. And then the next week I took them to the drop-in and noticed this sort of pair of women who were like running one of the tables just sort of discreetly put them under the table and were handing them out like as and when. And I was like, no. That isn't how this works. Like, I've bought enough for everybody. You need to put them on the table because nobody is going to say, can I have period products? Because we're not used to asking for it. For anyone who menstruates who's listened to this, you know that moment of being in school, being in work, and like, you've got a tampon. It's always a whisper, it's always up the sleeves, and especially if you are an asylum seeker who has been made to feel terrible by the state, like you don't deserve to even be here, why would you then think that you had the entitlement to ask for something that you need? And so what I decided to do was to set up an organisation that provided the products, not for individuals, but for the centres that were already working with asylum seekers and refugees, but just didn't have the cash or the space to organise something that seemed so niche. And that's really how it started.
I think it's really interesting that you saw yourself as adding value to other organisations. You saw yourself as, there's refugee centres, I can add value to those. So I'm collaborating, which is fundamentally, and I'm going to be totally sexist, but a very feminist virtue.
I don't think that's sexist. I think it is a feminist virtue. And feminist men can be like that too. But I think it's right. It's what I've learned in my creative work that I've done. It's what I've learned from movements that have gone before me, is that you can't do this on your own and you shouldn't even try.
Yeah. I mean, I should have said before, I'm not wearing lipstick, by the way.
Well, I'm very disappointed. I'm not. Yeah, I have to say, I'm not either, Keith. I'm not either. Oh, okay, so I'm glad Camilla's wearing it for us.
Everybody hold their hand up who's not wearing lipstick.
Yeah. A couple of questions on your charity, okay? Because you started the charity. You then had to create a trustee board. How did you go about that as a founder?
Yeah. I had no idea. I did not know what to do. A very good friend of mine called Jem Stein runs the Bike Project, which is another refugee charity. I basically called Jem probably every week for about a year and said, what do I do? What do I do? What do I do? And he very generously was like, right, number one, you need to find a board.
And you went, what's a board?
I was like, I don't need anyone to tell me what to do. And he was like, no, that's not how it works. So I think the first thing I did, I put a call out, I think it was on Facebook again. And the first person that came to me through a friend of mine who works in charities was Ruby Bailey Pratt. And she's working in fundraising for the British Red Cross. And we met for a coffee. It was amazing because she told me everything about Bloody Your Period. And I was like, okay. I was like, right, you get what we're trying to do. But it was very much looking for people who knew more than me.
Right. According to your notes, it took a long time for the Charity Commission to agree you being a charity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Why was that?
Well, the thing that was really holding us back was the name. So they really didn't like our name, and they really thought it was quote unquote offensive. It wasn't the word bloody. It was the word bloody with the word period. To which we basically wrote a retort saying, look, that's what periods are. And the fact that you're trying to censor us shows how deep this stigma goes. And we won.
That's an amazing story, really, isn't it? I mean, somewhat scandalous looking back on it. I mean, were you sort of affronted by that?
I mean, I wasn't surprised in the slightest.
Right.
I created the name to get attention. Mm-hmm. You know, people needed to talk about this stuff. And if we're not talking, I'm not doing any sort of euphemistic feminine care, her secrets type rubbish. There was a point where I thought, God, we should just call ourselves BGP and just get it done with. And then I thought, no, like, this is bigger than me, actually. Yeah.
So you started out as a campaigner. You're now the CEO. You have to answer to the Charities Commission. You've also now presumably got to speak to government, because what you want is change so that you cease to exist. Do you think the language is different when you speak to government?
Not really. I mean, I don't, like, sure, like, our copy and our language is pretty bold and brash.
I use the word visceral, Gabby, I think.
Visceral, sure. But that's just how I speak. When it comes to speaking to government, I don't really change in the same way that I don't really change when we talk to funders. But when you're working with government, you have to work at government's pace, right? Which is not the way that I work. Exactly. No, and so it's frustrating for me.
Is there not a slight worry that you speak truth to power, you're very direct with it? Is there not a slight worry that you therefore get uninvited from the guest list and maybe decisions are made without you in the room?
I think that's already happening, though. I wasn't invited in the first place. It's more of a case of having been able to get into the rooms full stop is more of the achievement. But look, you know, we've also got our chair of trustees, who's a really brilliant thinker and has a lot of experience in working with government, and so really knows the things to do and the things to say. And she's a huge support for me. But look, you know, I don't know where I've not been invited to. Like, and I would rather continue to speak for not only the people we work with, but the people that feel the same way, than quieten down and smooth off my edges.
I think you're absolutely on the mark. Really interesting, though, to go back to what you said before about trustees and then forward on the brand, is your go-to place seems to be Facebook. The first hire, I believe, you had was somebody in social media. I don't think we've ever had anybody on the podcast talk about its power. Can you talk a bit about that?
Yeah, that's absolutely true. I meet all these charity leaders and they're obsessed with getting in touch with millennials. And I'm like, well, do you know where they are? That's kind of where they are. It was just obvious to me. If you're making something, what do? You tell people about it. Where do we tell people at the moment? We're telling them on Facebook.
Yeah.
I'd worked at charity call centres where you call people up. What did they call them? Fuggers. Phone muggers.
That's right. Phone muggers. Yeah.
Yeah. And honestly, people did not like being called. They did not like having things sent to them. People felt like they were being bombarded. And actually, if you go on social media, you get to choose who bombards you. Right. And I think that's the big difference.
Obviously, at the moment, we're in incredibly strange times, and there's a lot of thinking going on around the charity sector at the moment and what it means. And I know Alex Scales, who's with us from the Centre for Charity Effectiveness, you've been involved in a lot of the conversations about moving forward. What's your take, Alex, on how Gabby is riding the wave at the moment?
Well, I think we see it quite a lot in terms of the relatively new, small startup, potentially crowdfunded, social media driven organisations are in a very good place to be able to flex and be agile during periods like we're currently going through. What I'm quite interested in on the back of that is you obviously have quite a distinct culture, you know, small, agile, digitally focused. How do you feel that works to your advantage or disadvantage when you're trying to collaborate with perhaps more traditional bricks and mortar, larger organisations? Yeah.
We don't really collaborate that often with really big organisations. I see more value in lifting up smaller organisations. So, I mean, when we first started out, I was advised by a few people to just get in touch with ActionAid and basically say, I've got a project for you, take this as a project. And I refused because it just felt like, no, why would I do that? Like, ActionAid could have done this already if they wanted to do it. That's not to say ActionAid aren't doing good things, but you need small charities so that you can move fast.
Yep.
And it seems to be the small charities that really made the biggest difference during COVID.
Yeah.
Just tell us a little bit maybe about what you had to do, because effectively your main distribution centre was suddenly off limits. Is that right?
Absolutely. And it's run by hundreds of volunteers who give hours of their time every single week to pack, log, clean, all of these things, just get pads out to people who need them. And literally within a week, we had to say, we can't have you anymore.
Simply because they couldn't be in the same space together.
Exactly. But also, as well as that, we couldn't have people touching things that were going out because we didn't know at the time how infectious anything was.
Yep.
The main thing we have always wanted to do, and you know, we've got activism, education, all of that, the main thing is no one should go without period products.
Yeah.
So we really quickly worked together as a team to turn that around. We created a trust-based take what you need scheme where we essentially gave people could just email our operations coordinator and say, I need to come in and get some pads. We had to ask people to stop sending us pads, which still happens. I mean, people are still great and they still want to help, but we had to do it to an all cash, you know, which has never been what we're about. It's always been about give us the product and we'll give the products to people. And that's what people love about it.
And do you think long term it will change the way you operate?
Without a doubt, it's changed us. And it's actually encouraged us to become more efficient. That's what's been really positive about it. We have quadrupled the amount of products going out within about a month. Part of that was because I think we just spoke the truth to our supporters and we said, this is what's going to happen. And we really need your support on this. There was no sort of like, people will go without. We never say things like that. But we said, we are going to do this. Help us do this.
Was there a moment when you went, oh God, now what do I do? Or did you really immediately go into fast forward?
Oh no, there was a moment I had a little cry. I think I just suddenly realized, oh God, I have to decide this stuff. This is on
it's
me.
On your shoulders. You know, it's you.
I don't think I panicked or anything, but it was really sad to think the way that our volunteers work, we're not going to be able to have that anymore.
Yeah. But if you look forward, Gabby, to the point in the not too distant future where these sorts of issues that you're directly addressing don't exist, what do you do next?
God knows. I've got no idea. No, it's fine. I think about it all the time.
Because what I was really interested to read is that you see this as time expired. Mm-hmm. You don't want to be delivering bloody good period products in 30 years time. You see this as not a job for yourself, for life, which a lot of people who set up charities, they have what is called founder syndrome. Mm-hmm. So they found the charity, they don't want it to finish because that's their whole identity. Now I don't get that from you, which is kind of why I wondered, what are you going to do next?
Yeah, it's not my identity. It's part of my identity. I'm sure I will always do something that's feminist. I've been thinking a lot about the anti-Semitism that's flaring up, especially in the UK. Mm. And I wonder if I'll do something with that. I wonder if I'll do some sort of speaking circuit, make some money, buy a house and then start again. But, you
know. Is that where the money is?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. You don't get into this industry to get rich. But I won't be with BGP in 5 years' time. Not a chance.
So what will be the tipping point for you then that says, right, I've had enough?
I hope there's not a tipping point as such. I don't ever want to be desperate to get out. I think it's about looking around and seeing the other people that I feel that I can pass the baton onto, which I'm sure will be terrifying, but I have to do it.
But equally, you talk about wanting your organisation to be the fastest to die because you have achieved your charitable aims. Have you set yourself a timeline for that? And how will it feel stepping away potentially within 5 years when that still hasn't been achieved?
Yeah, it's a really hard thing. I switch back and forth. There are points when I think the delivery of services could be done in 5 years. We can still do our education program. I think that's, you know, education is an ongoing thing, as is our employers project. But in terms of deliverables and how we set up, I think we could be done. We've already seen schools are getting free products. Like that happened in a couple of years. Yeah. That's really amazing. Yeah. And I don't see why it shouldn't happen any quicker for the rest of the people.
It's a bit like the free school dinners thing that seemed to happen overnight.
Exactly.
Yeah.
One of the things that's quite obvious is that you don't feel the need to be restricted to your brief. And you've been very forthright in talking about how charities should behave. We've already talked a little bit about the language they should use, that sense of racism in some charities, and almost a sense that you're from a generation which expects higher standards.
Yeah, I think that's a fair point. I grew up thinking that charities were the good guys. And then you discover that charities are not always the good guys.
Not always, yeah.
And I want to rectify that. And I really feel for charities. Like, I really do. Because ultimately it is about bringing money in so that you can do the work. And people do not feel that they can get to the point of be like, we're going to take a massive risk and we're not going to show this woman on our screens anymore. And we're not going to bring in that much money. But ultimately, like, you're just perpetuating one problem with another. And I think race is a huge part of it, and colonialism. And I think it's just a huge amount of learning and unlearning that people need to do before they can start making these changes. Because if we carry on the way that we do in charity industry, it's going to get whiter and whiter, richer and richer. And the victims are going to get poorer and poorer and less empowered. And that's not a world I want to live in.
Can I squeeze one question in? And I love the passion that you've got. If you were to be sitting in front of the Prime Minister now, what two things would you ask him to do?
I would tell him to make sure that everybody who is living in poverty is able to access these products for free.
Mm-hmm.
And then I would tell him to get off his arse and do some work.
Yeah, okay. That's brilliant.
Excellent.
Gabby, it's been a pleasure to have you on the podcast. Thank you so much. We'll monitor you with interest and get you back in a few years' time.
Yeah, sure. I've really enjoyed it. Thank you so much.
There's something very refreshing about somebody like Gabby, isn't there? I mean, it almost feels like she's thinking as a visionary about how we should behave. There is something about the future about Gabby, isn't there, that we should all listen to?
Yes, but what fascinated me about her was she is prepared to take a risk. She's also prepared to throw out there her needs, her wants, and see what comes back. She doesn't care. She will have a go. And I think that's commendable. She's also, it strikes me, very organized and very, if you like, management orientated, which you also have to be if you're going to be a leader.
Well, I'm interested in the way you say she doesn't care, Camilla. I think she does care. She talks about not having a skin thick enough to operate. I think she's very brave. And she's prepared to put herself out there for the cause that she believes in. And I think it's that thoughtful decision making as well that will mark her out as a really strong leader.
Keith?
I think that's right, because I've written down very brave, understanding the challenges, realistic, but not ashamed. She's not ashamed to go and ask. She's not ashamed to say, I might get it wrong.
Yeah.
And I thoroughly enjoyed that.
I mean, she really understood the power of creative communication as well.
Oh, God,
but also, you know, how to keep it simple and to encourage people to contribute as opposed to giving out of guilt, which I really like that take. And I think if we could switch that round within our current society away from that sort of Victorian benevolent approach, I think we'll be in a much, much better position. And I also love the way she said, you know, find that gap, see where you can add value to what someone else is doing and go in there and join together. So that power of collaboration as well.
Yeah.
And almost a sense that COVID has helped her to sort of formulate a vision and to use the fact that she's in the social media mix to her advantage. COVID has been a positive.
Yeah, because for her, a lot of it is literally about delivery systems, which, of course, have come to the fore during COVID. So one of the difficulties is going to be, how does she keep volunteers engaged? Because she said they love coming in. Well, they can't come into anything anymore. They've got to somehow enthuse your volunteers in such a way that they will keep supporting you in other ways.
But, you know, I'm sat here feeling enthused and excited for her. And I could see how she could enthuse volunteers to come alongside her and help it. And I think that's a good lesson for all chief execs of charities. You can't just sit back and say, I'm the chief exec, I know best.
This has been Good Charity, Bad Charity. We'll be back with another edition soon. Our thanks to the Centre for Charity Effectiveness, to Dan Hardoon, to Whistler Productions. We're also grateful for the City Bridge Trust who support our work. Don't forget you can rate and review the podcast. You can find more information on goodcharitybadcharity.com. From Camilla, from Keith, from Alex and myself, goodbye.